With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on this Friday morning. Today is Friday, August the 4th. Coming up in today's show, we have this week's Western View on water and an update on pasture and rangeland conditions. But first, the House Committee continues its Farm Bill listening tour with a stop in Minnesota before heading to California this weekend. Farmers and ranchers packed the room at the Minnesota Farm Fest to let lawmakers know what they need in the next Farm Bill.
The Farm Bill is probably the most important piece of legislation for rural, not only farmers. It's a safety net for farmers, but it's a safety net for rural America. It's a safety net for America, for the food security.
Our farm was built from scratch. We don't have generations of equity to fall back on in the event of another market collapse. So safety nets are imperative for a farm like ours. We already restructured our loans once in 2009, and I don't like to think about doing that again. So that's why we were really excited when the Margin Protection Program was rolled out. We strongly support a program that is based on both milk revenue and feed prices. Unfortunately, the Margin Protection Program isn't working.
You fund the Foreign Ag Service, which a part of that is the Foreign Market Development and Market Access Program. Those funds are vitally critical to us and the Grains Council and to world trade. So please consider that as we move forward on the 2018 Farm Bill.
A listening session is scheduled for tomorrow in Modesto. AgNet West is live streaming the audio of the session. Head to our website for more information. That's agnetwest.com. We go now to Brian German.
For the first time ever, an agreement has finally been made to allow U.S. rice exports into the Chinese market. Accounting for close to 40% of American rice exports, California has a lot to gain from the opening of this new market. President and CEO of the California Rice Commission, Tim Johnson, noted the hard work put into establishing this new trade relationship.
We're very appreciative, particularly of Secretary Perdue's effort, really to pursue this agreement that had been actually discussed and negotiated for 10 years. His ability and desire to really get that done in the early days of this administration. So it's a great opportunity for rice in California. And we look forward to building that market probably over that same period, about 10 years. I know our growers and our mills are very committed to opening that market. So good future prospects, and we have to work really hard to make sure that we can make the most of those.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West.
And here's Taylor Hillman.
AgNet West told you about the air curtain burner that Minturn Hulling Cooperative and Western Agricultural Processors Association worked on together to get something to help reduce ag waste that's piling up.
The air curtain burner, it's not the silver bullet, but it is one option. It's an option that looks right now like it's a promising one in the short term. Get us by until we can find out those long-term solutions like the biogas plants.
WAPA President Roger Isom said it helped that Minturn has a large, isolated facility, but the process was difficult.
There's two hurdles you have to cross when you go through the air district, and that is the normal, what we call new source review permitting, that has, you know, certain thresholds that trigger best available control technology or trigger offsets, and then there's the risk or the air toxic side of it.
The first step was a challenge enough, and they had to reduce some of the amounts that Minturn could process. But Isom said the requirements in the second step was the harder problem to solve.
But the bigger hurdle was the risk part of it. And what it did, it forced us to place the burner in an area that isn't the most optimum. It's on the opposite end of the property from where the pile is. And so he's got to move that pile over to where the burner is. But the fact of the matter is, we got it permitted. He's able to use it. He's using it every day since he got it installed. And we're just trying to optimize it right now.
I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
A bill endorsed by President Donald Trump that would change the U.S. immigration system could well harm farm labor. The bill by Republican Senators Tom Cotton of Arkansas and David Perdue of Georgia would reduce the number of legal immigrants coming into the United States and emphasize highly educated immigrants over what are regarded as low-skilled laborers, which could be interpreted to mean those in agriculture. The Reforming America Immigration for a Strong Economy, or RAISE Act, does not target the H-2A program, which brings in temporary workers. But the bill would have implications for immigrants who may try to qualify for permanent residency and for the prospect of bringing in workers in the livestock and dairy industries, which need year-round workers. The bill seems likely to meet opposition from Democrats and some Republicans in the Senate, but could start the immigration debate and lead to some method of reform. New data from the Department of Agriculture shows U.S. honeybee numbers increased in the last year. USDA released its honeybee health survey this week, which found the number of commercial U.S. honeybee colonies rose 3% to 2.89 million as of April 1st this year. That compared to a year earlier. The number of hives lost to colony collapse disorder was 84,430 in this year's first quarter. That's down 27% from a year earlier. Still, more than two-fifths of beekeepers said mites are harming their hives, and with pesticides and other factors still stressing bees, the overall increase is largely the result of a constant replenishment of losses. Colony collapse, while not a leading cause of loss, has perplexed scientists for more than a decade. May Barenbaum from the University of Illinois Entomology Department told Bloomberg News that as beekeepers have worked to improve hive conditions, the syndrome has been a concern. She says colony collapse disorder has been more of a blip in the history of beekeeping, adding that it's staggering that half of America's bees have mites. She claims that colony collapse disorder has been vastly overshadowed by diseases, recognizable parasites, and diagnosable physiological problems. This is Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. This week's Western View is coming up after the break. We will be back in just a moment.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Okay, Mike is calling from Davenport. Go ahead, Mike. You're on Soil Talk.
The engine isn't performing like it should, and I'm wondering what's going on.
All right, couple of questions, Mike. Do you have high porosity in aggregates? Is there a porous medium for gas exchange?
I don't know.
Well, hey, look, Mike, if you want performance, you got to find out if it's good under the hood, huh?
Okay, how?
Stop by your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today, Mike. They can help you supercharge your soil and get that engine cranking it out for you.
Hey, we're out of time, Mike. Hey, thanks for your call. Gotta go. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Soil Talk.
Find out what you can do to maximize your farm's production engine. It's soil. Through soil health management systems, you can lower input costs, increase yields, and drought protect your farm. Stop by your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle. Or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Under Obama, the EPA and the Corps of Engineers were building this concept of the waters of the USA. They expanded the definition of wetlands to include almost any farm in the country. If it had come about, these rules would have put most farming activities under the thumb of the federal government. They would have killed off a lot of agriculture. Trump got rid of the federal rules, but now Governor Brown is reviving them on the state level. He wants to create the same type of controls on farmers that Obama wanted on the federal level. The Waters of the USA concept has a long and checkered history since first being created in the 1970s. I'm gonna try to explain it, but frankly, I'm oversimplifying. It's the only way I can grasp these things. But here goes. As a result of a 2006 Supreme Court decision, there was a lot of controversy over the Waters of the USA concept. It wasn't created by an act of Congress as much as it was the split decision wrote in 2006 by two opposing judges with opposing definitions. President Obama went with the liberal judge's decision. His EPA experts created extensive rules and regulations, which were fought bitterly by farmers and others. But now, with the regime change in Washington, the rules have changed. President Trump followed the decision wrote by the conservative judge, and his appointees have eliminated the worst of the Waters of the USA concept. Farmers no longer need the permission of the EPA if they want to plow. But some people in California think those rules are a good idea. The State Water Resources Control Board is readying its own regulations to prevent landowners from plowing, paving, or damaging land that could possibly get wet part of the time. According to an article in the Los Angeles Daily News, farmers, home builders, developers, and business groups have already testified against these proposed state regulations. They warn that the rules will strip away the rights of landowners, raise costs, and damage the state's economy. Well, we better keep an eye on this movement. I hope Sacramento comes to its senses soon. This just doesn't bode well for agriculture as we know it. I'm Lynn Wilcox. That's the Western View for Magnet West.
Well, in today's livestock news, the U.S. Meat Export Federation recently held its 7th annual Latin American Product Showcase in Colombia. And according to this report from Joe Sheely, U.S. exporters and Latin American importers saw great value in the showcase.
Now in its 7th year, the U.S. Meat Export Federation's Latin American Product Showcase has quickly become a premier red meat trading event for both sellers and buyers. In this USMEF report, we hear insights from this year's showcase, which was just held in Cartagena, Colombia. Here's Josie Castro, lead sales manager for the region for Atlanta-based exporter Interra International.
It is actually a very productive show for us. The first time I came as an employee of Interra was like 5 years ago. I have been in every single one of the shows since then. This year is probably one of the busiest that I have seen, and also the qualified customers. All of the customers that are here have been doing business already in the United States, and they have been importing product, and they have a little bit of experience on how the business goes and how the credit goes. So definitely I think that it's a big kudos to the organization.
Pablo Salazar is with Atlantic Food Service, one of Colombia's largest importers and distributors.
We're the biggest beef importer for Colombia, and the 5th or 6th biggest importer of pork. We go to all type of food service, family-owned restaurants, big restaurant chains, and all-inclusive hotels all around Colombia. But every year that we go to an event like this, it helps to develop new products, new relationships also with traders. So I save like 2 or 3 months of traveling in 2 days.
Jose Escobar of El Salvador-based food distributor Diaco was impressed with the educational aspect of the event.
In El Salvador, we have a lot of customers, are mostly premium restaurants that sell U.S. beef and U.S. pork, which is usually priced above the national beef or pork, but the quality is much better, and it's been great. You get a lot of information from the presentations in the morning, the future prices of the cuts, so yeah, a lot of good information on the product.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And last week, the National Pork Producers Council applauded two actions reflecting the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's common sense approach to farm regulation. MPPC filed a brief in support of the EPA's recent motion to stay a U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit April 11th decision that rejected the farm exemption for emissions reporting requirements. In filing the motion, the EPA is seeking more time for farms to estimate their emissions and to explore regulatory and administrative approaches to the reporting obligations. Now, regardless of the court's decision, MPPC will continue to explore regulatory solutions. In addition, the EPA and Army Corps of Engineers also formally initiated the process to withdraw the Waters of the U.S. rule, of course proposing a regulation to repeal it and opening a public comment period on rescinding the rule. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Well, not only are America's bee farmers losing hives to unstoppable disease, mites, and stress, in one area they're losing entire hives to thieves. In one case, the culprits have been arrested and 2,500 hives were recovered. 2,500 hives! Location and names are not the important thing in this report, but it's good to know that more than one thief has been caught. Bee farmers have been warned that it's very difficult to recover those stolen hives unless they're properly identified. Thieves have been reported in at least four states and three different regions of the country. Thefts are generally done by someone with experience in the honeybee industry, and it's mostly in winter months. But be aware, it can happen anywhere, anytime. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, Agnet West.
Cindy Zimmerman has today's interview segment. Here's Cindy.
Jeanette Merritt is our smart farmer for this episode. She's an Indiana farm girl and a former agricultural journalist who's raising crops, hogs, and kids with her husband and serving the industry in many different capacities. Jamie Johansson caught up with Jeanette to learn more about how smart farming allows her to wear many hats.
Well, I get to sit down once again and chat with another one of our smart farmers, Jeanette Merritt, as a board member for the Indiana Soybean Alliance, and she's a pig farmer and a crop farmer from Indiana. Tell me about yourself.
I have been on the USFRA board for a little over a year, and I do sit here on the board representing Indiana soybean farmers as a board member for the Indiana Soybean Alliance. My husband and I farm in North Central Indiana, and we've returned to my family farm, so I am a fourth generation farmer. Growing up with a little bit of everything, like many farmers did, but we have specifically focused now on corn, soybeans, wheat, and hogs, and raising that fifth generation on the farm as well with three kids and hoping one of them, or all of them, want to come home and farm someday.
Take me through your operation. How do you juggle the crops and the pigs and the kids all in one day?
It's busy. We are fortunate to have some hired help who work for us as well, people who are like family. We farm. Our main component of our farm is my dad, my uncle, a cousin, and my husband. My grandmother is still with us as well, but she just kind of likes to check in rather than being actively involved on the farm. But we have some people who have worked with us for many, many, many years, some very dedicated employees. There's always something going on. The hogs are an everyday job. The crop season for us will be starting in mid-April, and we'll start with planting and push that hopefully into June, do wheat harvest. And then, of course, crop harvest in the fall. Days are busy. The kids all have activities, but they are all part of the farm. They're in 4-H. We've got a few 4-H cows that are roaming the property as well. So it's a lot, but it all gets done.
Well, you talk a lot about family and extended family. You know, your employees are like family as much time as you spend together on the farm year-round, day in and day out. But you wear another hat. You also work for the Indiana pork producers. Tell me about that hat.
I had the opportunity after a career as a farm broadcaster and a career running our wine industry in Indiana to move back to Indiana Pork. So in January of 2016, I took the chance to become our director of checkoff programs for the Indiana pork industry. It was a natural fit, the opportunity to go and tell the story of our livestock farmers in the state when it's something I've done my entire life, felt like the right thing to do. Pork producers need an advocate. They need to be able to speak for themselves as well. And it's my job to not only advocate for livestock production in Indiana, but teach those guys and ladies how to stand up and tell their story, how to be transparent, how to show everybody what's going on in their barns and what we're doing as hog farmers is the right way to farm. And so it is a pleasure to serve our 3,000 pork farmers in Indiana.
Well, let's talk about smart farming. Consumers resonate with the term smart. We have smart homes, we have smart phones, and everything in our lives is technology-based. How do you, on your crop farm, but also on the pig side, utilize technology every day? And how has that changed over your course? You're a fourth generation, you're raising a fifth generation, but let's think back to your grandma that's still on the farm.
my grandmother grew up with tractors that were open to the elements, where she did have a couple bottom plow as well. And farming was hard. It's still difficult. And I won't say that there's not its challenges, but I look at the way my grandma and grandpa farmed and think it was hard. It was back-breaking hard work. And when I look at the way we farm now, we're so fortunate to have this new technology. We can get in a tractor, push a button, and that tractor will drive itself to the end of the row. Drives my kids nuts because they can't, drive the tractor anymore until they get to the end of the row. That GPS technology allows just the right seed to be put at the right space in the ground. It allows just the right amount of fertilizer to be put in the ground. There's so much technology that we can use for our crops that really ensure that we're raising a safe, affordable food supply. When we look at the hog barns, some of my favorite but maybe most annoying technology as well is that alarm system that anytime a room maybe goes below a temperature that we want it set at, my phone rings. Mm-hmm. And it tells me that our room where the baby pigs are kept might be too cold for those baby pigs. And so someone needs to go out and check it and make sure that room is warm enough to keep those baby pigs just at the right temperature. So we have all sorts of that technology that allows us to raise hogs in the best way that we possibly can.
Farming's hard. Do you think that, we're losing more and more farmers, and it's hard for young farmers to want to come back to the operation? Do you think in the future you'd be able to, with this technology, entice more either young farmers or future generations?
It's so exciting when I have the opportunity to talk to high school students. I'll go around and talk to high school FFA students, and so many of those kids are there because the technology's fun. To them, it's just fun. They're doing all these things that, they're writing codes for different projects, and they're editing genes, and they're doing all this stuff that I never did as a kid. My grandma certainly didn't do. And so to them, I think that opens doors in agriculture. It gives them career ideas, and it gets them either back to the farm or to something related to agriculture. So I really think the technology is fun for those students.
What's your favorite technology on the farm? Whether it makes the job the easiest or it's just fun to utilize and it's fun to think about.
I really love the GPS on the tractors. I really like being able to watch those tractors move across the field or be behind the wheel and know that, it can do it by itself. We're not that far, I think, from even some more advanced technologies that will maybe have a riderless tractor that I know it's out there, but it'll be, mass produced and we won't need to be in it. I think that'll be a sad day for me because I do still like to sit behind the wheel. I think that GPS technology really is just something that we use on our phones, and it's fun to explain to people how we can use it on our farm.
Well, we've talked about the family concept. We've talked about the use of technology. Let's use the word sustainability and how you are. We talk a lot about sustainability when it comes to the environment and instilling that the land will be there for your next generation.
When I look at sustainability, it's not necessarily about what I'm doing now. It's what we're doing now to impact that next generation, that generation, that my 13-year-old can come home in 10 years, that her children can come home in, 30 years after that. We're looking at sustainability for multi-generations. And I think there's a lot of ways we do it around the farm. It can be with water. It can be with air quality. It can be, a simple use of putting our manure back into our own fields where we are utilizing, that natural fertilizer to help then grow our crops. So sustainability for us really is ensuring that there's a farm down the road for that next generation to come home to.
Well, you wear multiple hats on multiple boards and work for them. Let's talk about the relationship with, Indiana Soy and with Indiana Pork and USFRA. Why have you guys come together? Why do you feel the importance to work together to continue that dialogue to consumers?
Indiana Soybean has partnered with USFRA from the beginning. And we're fortunate in Indiana. We actually have a lot of our commodity groups have joined together to form a group called Indiana Family of Farmers, where we're doing somewhat of the same thing USFRA is doing on a national level at a state level. A lot of fewer dollars, but if maybe a few less people as well. But we're working to get out to those consumers. When we look at the national level, it's important for Indiana Soybean to be here to make sure, we're able to learn the information, take it back to our farmers, implement it into the programming that our staff is doing with soybean. Indiana Pork hasn't been able to get a seat at the table yet, but National Pork Board is here, National Pork Producers Council is here, and representing those interests of the hog industry as well.
the smart farm concept that USFRA has rolled out this year has lots of elements, whether it's 360 videos or taking the technology and the information to the classroom. Where do you see it going in the future? What's your favorite part of it, and how do you, sitting on the board, be able to kind of continue to share that story that you've already, what you're already doing in multiple irons in the fire that you have on your farm and in your career?
I love the idea of the 360 videos. I think of Disney World. You know, we've been a couple times with kids, and you go in and you see some of that technology that, you know, what we're doing here to explain agriculture to consumers. Disney World is doing at their facility that's drawing consumers in and to, you know, watch videos about Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. There's so much of that technology that's out there. So to be able to take that and bring it to agriculture, mm-hmm. I think is neat. I can't bring every person I want to into my hog barn. I can stand and do a Facebook Live video, and I do lots of those. I'm explaining the farm, but if I can create a video, if I can have USFRA come in, create a 360 video, and then push that out there so people can see, I think that's great. The hog barns, you know, they look from the road, they're white, and you can't see what's going on through those walls. And so to be able to go in and create a video and explain to people, you know, what's actually taking place in there, gives people a glimpse into our world, and I think that technology is fun.
We talk about the consumers at a global perspective, but you're talking about you driving down your road, your county road or whatever, in your own community, and you see those buildings. Is there any conversations that you've been able to have with your local community, with your local schools, with your neighbors about what you do?
One of the best conversations I ever had was with a blogger in Indiana. She's from the northeast side of Indianapolis. She would describe herself as a soccer mom. She's got kids. She's driving around to practice. And I brought her to the farm. She didn't know anything about agriculture. She lives next to Whole Food stores. And she's getting bombarded with the messaging that says agriculture is doing it all wrong. And brought her into the hog barn and spent the day with her and showed her what we did. And she walked out and looked at my husband and I and said, if I did not know you guys as farmers, I would absolutely believe everything that the other side is telling me. And it was that light bulb moment that thought, all we've got to do is tell people. All we have to do is explain it to them and show them what we're doing. Be transparent and explain to people at an educational level. You know, let's not use terms that they don't understand. Let's not talk over them. Let's engage a conversation with them and show them what we're doing, because people want to trust a farmer. They want to trust that face. And I think that, you know, that's just one of those experiences that that won't go away. That was pretty neat.
What's your, I'll always like to ask about an elevator speech. What's your 30-second consumer elevator speech about your operation, what you do on your family farm, and what story do you like to share with them?
That I'm a fourth-generation family farmer, and I grocery shop at the same stores that they do, and I have to go in and look at the food and decide what is the best choice for my family. I'm not going to have someone guilt me into a food decision that I'm not comfortable with. I'm going to shop the way that's best for me. There's room for everybody in agriculture. And the way my family chooses to farm is providing that safe, affordable food supply. And we're doing it with great technology and in a sustainable way. And so we're going to go shop right alongside them and make those best choices for us. And we hope that they do for their family as well.
And thanks to Jeanette Merritt for sharing her smart farmer story.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the Silage Zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. Wrapping up our agriculture news for today, a slight change in the latest U.S. pasture and rangeland condition index reveals the varying conditions on a regional level. Rod Bain has more.
As expected in the late summer period, there is deterioration of U.S. pasture and rangeland conditions. But as USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey notes, the week-over-week change is slight.
Good to excellent ratings now, 45%. That's down a point from last week. Very poor to poor ratings, 23%. That's up a point from the previous week.
So while the impact of the Northern Plains drought is obvious on pasture and rangeland conditions there,
that three-state area centered on the Dakotas and Montana in extremely dire shape from a pasture land perspective. 78% very poor to poor in North Dakota, 71% in South Dakota, and 60% in Montana.
Rippey says the nationwide condition is balanced out by ample showers and favorable pasture conditions in the eastern U.S.
In fact, a handful of states, including South Carolina and Alabama, still more than 80% good to excellent as we head toward the end of July.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.